Let me slide over to the semi-middle here. Can you hear me? Every time I ask that question, it's not the commercial I think of. It's a story George McGinnis told me about an old guy and his wife in a church service in Scotland. And the guy fell asleep during the preacher's sermon, and he started snoring. And his wife took her Bible and hit him right upside the head. And he came to and he said, "I can still hear him hit me again." I don't know why that has stuck with me all these years, but we're in Proverbs, in case you've wondered. In Proverbs, tonight, chapter 11. While I am talking, Joe, can I get you to pass these out? Sure, everybody's got one. Everybody got something to write with, I hope. If you don't, you might have to share. You're not going to have to write a lot, but you need something to scribble with. Get your crayon out, something to make your mark with. Proverbs, the 11th chapter. This is a test to see if you can stay within the lines. No, you'll see what this is for in just a minute. We went through one of the Proverbs chapters, chapter 10, last time, and I thought, rather than me helping you this time, I'm going to leave you to your own devices here and have you do some analyzing of what we're reading. Thank you, Joe. Let me read through this. You follow as I read, and then we'll go back through it, or let you go back through it. Notice that every verse is a proverb. And notice that every verse has a and a B. That is, you have a phrase, the first phrase in the proverb, the first part of the verse, then you have a second phrase. So you got an A part and a B part. And so as we go through these, sort of think about what we're reading and think about the structure of each of these proverbs, okay? Here we go. 31 verses. That's why you've got 31 boxes here on your piece of paper. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is His delight. When pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. Riches profit not in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivereth from death. The righteousness of the perfect shall direct his way, but the wickedness shall fall by his own wickedness. The righteousness of the upright shall deliver them, but transgressors shall be taken in their own iniquity. When a wicked man dieth, his expectation shall perish, and the hope of unjust men perisheth. The righteous is delivered out of trouble, and the wicked cometh in his stead. A hypocrite with his mouth destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge shall the just be delivered. When it goeth well with the righteous, the city rejoiceth, and when the wicked perish, there is shouting. By the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted, but it is overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. He that is void of wisdom despiseth his neighbor, but a man of understanding holdeth his peace. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. Where no counsel is, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors there is safety. He that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is sure. That's a mouthful. He that hateth suretyship is sure. A gracious woman retaineth honor, and strong men retain riches. The merciful man doeth good to his own soul, but he that is cruel troubleth his own flesh. The wicked worketh a deceitful work, but to him that soweth righteousness shall be a sure reward. As righteousness tendeth to life, so he that pursues evil pursues it to his own death. They that are of a froward heart are an abomination to the Lord, but such as are upright in their way are his delight. Though hand join in hand, the wicked shall not be unpunished, but the seed of the righteous shall be delivered. As a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman who is out without discretion. The desire of the righteous is only good, but the expectation of the wicked is wrath. There is he that scattereth and yet increaseth. There is he that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. He that diligently seeketh good procureth favor, but he that seeketh mischief, it shall come unto him. He that trusteth in his riches shall fall, but the righteous shall flourish like a branch. He that troubleth his own house shall inherit the wind, and the fool shall be servant to the wise of heart. The fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. Behold, the righteous shall be recompensed in the earth, much more the wicked and the sinner. All right? I want to have you think back over some of the things we've talked about, especially the various types of Proverbs. Go ahead and move to the next slide. Remember that we have what's called synonymous Proverbs, and I've tried to give you a little mathematical formula up there. In other words, in the case of this kind of proverb, A equals B. In other words, B is simply restating what you just stated in A. And you know what I mean by A and B. First phrase of the proverb, the second phrase of the proverb. So in synonymous, A equals B. They're both saying the same thing, just using different words. Then in the proverbs of contrast, B is equal to not A. In other words, you have the opposite thing expressed in B that was expressed in A. Right? Okay? Then in Proverbs of comparison, that little squiggly line between the B and the A, if you're in Steve in SQL Server, structured query language, if you're a programmer, Robert knows all this stuff, that's the like operator. And in other words, you're saying that B is like A. Okay? In the fourth type, you have what's called a satirical proverb. And that proverb is a proverb that mocks or makes fun of something. The fifth one is a proverb of evaluation, that A is greater than B. In other words, A is better than this. This is better than this. Okay? Proverbs of consequence, B follows A. In other words, if you do A, you wind up reaping B. So it's a consequence of the action of A. And then a synthetic proverb is where you add on an additional thought to A. In other words, it's A plus B. You're adding, you're saying something and then you're saying, and this is also true here. You're adding the two thoughts together. So you're making a synthesized version of the proverb. Okay, those are the basic types of proverbs. Now tonight, and I've made this up, and it's probably not the best way to put it, I want you to think in terms of classifying. In other words, we've got a type of proverb. What kind of proverb? Is it a synthetic proverb? Is it a comparison proverb? Is it a contrast? What type is it? And then I want you to classify it as to its subject matter. I want you to use the letter B to say this is a business proverb. I'm going to cheat a little bit and look at proverb number one. What are we talking about? Just weights. Where do you encounter just weights? Yeah, you're selling bologna. And the idea is when you're selling bologna, don't put your thumb on the scale. That's the old way of getting a little more for your money. And so that would be a type of, a class of proverbs that falls into the business, the way you conduct your business. C would stand for character. In other words, this proverb is telling you something about the character of the person. The internal thinking, how he functions, how he thinks. D is domestic. This is dealing, when I say domestic, I mean it has something to do with the home. How you do your family. S is societal. It's the idea of this affects the broader society around me than just my own home. This affects everybody else that I associate with. And then paradoxical is P, meaning that you you know what a paradox is? It's a paradoxers. Paradox. A paradox is a seeming contradiction. In other words, it doesn't seem like this ought to be true, but it is. Okay? So a paradox is just it's a rhetorical device, seems strange. A good example, Jesus saying, "He that loses his life shall keep his life." That's a paradox. Alright, then there's a number of these parable or proverbs that have to do with the subject of righteousness. In fact, there were so many, I decided to make a separate class just for those. That this is, because over and over again, we have the idea of the foolish man does wickedness, the righteous man is a wise man. And there's so many of them, I decided, well, let's just lump all those in one lump. Okay, what I want you to do is for the next few minutes, I want you to go through these 31 Proverbs. That gives you about 20 seconds apiece. First of all, I want you under the proverb type, and we're going to put these up here. Wesley, go ahead and go to the next slide. There you have all the types and all the classes. Okay? So under the proverb type, put the number that corresponds to the type, and under the proverb classification, put the letter into which class you would sort this. Now, keep in mind, there's no right or wrong answer. Well, there is. We're going to make fun of you if you get the wrong answer. No. A lot of this is just, and there's a lot of overlap, is what I'm saying. There's a lot of times that it's somewhat difficult, especially to classify them. They could fit more than one. But most of the time, you can pretty well say this type of proverb. So, we'll make you do the work. We sort of did this on with me helping you last week. This time I want you to do it on your own. So if you would go down through this, put the type and the class for each proverb, each verse. What I'm trying to do is to get you to think as you go through these and read these proverbs. I want you to think about what you're reading and think analytically about what you're reading. Critically about what you're reading. All right, I'll let you work here for a few minutes. If we don't get all the way to the end, won't be the end of the world, but you can take it home and look at it. Go as far as you can. Wrap it up, just stop where you are, and let's talk about it a little bit. What did you discover as far as the proverb type? What is the preponderance in this chapter? Okay, you've got a lot of them dealing with righteousness. But that's class. What, as far as the type, is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. What did you say, Robert? Right. Over and over again, you have the parables of, or proverbs. I keep saying parable. Proverbs of contrast. And usually, you have the word but in the middle. That's your cue. That you're saying this, but here's the opposite, here's this. Let's go through. As I mentioned, the first verse is clearly a proverb of contrast, and it's dealing in the realm of business. What about verse 2? You see the word but there, so we're dealing with contrast. What class would you put that in? Character or righteousness? Yeah, character, I guess, would be the... In other words, we're dealing with the proud man is brought to shame. The lowly man is a wise man. So you're dealing with the description of their character. This is how you would determine the character of the man. The third one. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. Be very, very similar to the previous one. You're looking at the character of the person involved, and it's a contrast. Give me an example of one of these other types. Fifth verse, Joe, expound on that. As consequence. Well, there is that element there. It's got the word but in there, which would make you think we're contrasting, and it does do that, but yet at the same time, it's telling you what will be the consequence of this type of action. Anybody else have a variation on type here than contrast? There's several of them further down you get. You may not have got there. What about you, Janet? Because what? Okay. All right. Okay. wrong. Now notice 6, the righteousness. Here we're dealing, that's why I said we got a whole bunch of these Proverbs. You look for the word righteous or righteousness and you see it over and over again. Contrasting the righteous and the wicked. There in verse 6, the righteousness is contrasted with the transgressor. In verse 7, the wicked man is... that's a good one. Verse 7. What are you seeing there? What do you say, Tony? A comparison of what? They're like. And okay, they're... Huh? Well, I mean, there's no real wrong. I mean... if we look at verse 7, when a wicked man dieth, his expectation shall perish, and the hope of unjust men perish. Notice in both cases, you've got wicked men. In other words, it's not like the wicked does this, the righteous does this. In both cases, in verse 7, you've got the wicked man is the subject in both, and perishing is what happens in both. So it could be a sense of consequence. Or this would be an example of number 7, a synthetic proverb where you're adding a second thought to the first thought. Anybody put down a synthetic? You did? Oh, Tim did. Tim, of course, Tim did. Yeah. Evaluation? Well, now when I say evaluation, I'm meaning that this is better than this. Okay? This is one half is better than the other half. Or more preferred, or whatever. Did anybody spot a satirical proverb? Those are rather rare. I just like them. There you go. The pig snout. Look down in verse 22. And now this could be several things. As a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman who is without discretion. In other words, well, you could call that, it's not a contrast. You could say, this is a comparison, yeah. But what makes me think of a satirical proverb is the fact, the bizarreness of having a gold ring in a pig snout. In other words, obviously we're making fun of something here. That would not be what you would typically find. In other words, what he's saying is, as out of place as a gold ring in a pig snout would be, so, a beautiful woman who is completely without discretion, her mouth runs away, runs off. I like that. Well, the women probably don't like that, but anyway, in other words, her beauty is marred by her mouth in the same way that the pig is completely, the gold ring just completely out of place in the pig snout. So, I like that one. There's some interesting one. Any others that catch your attention here? That you, again, another type? I think most of the variations were in the second half of this chapter, which most of you never got to. Just notice a few things. Look in verse 14. He says, where no counsel is. Well, back up. Let's go all the way back to verse 10. What did y'all put for that? What's that? Synthetic. In other words, we're adding two thoughts together. But when you classify it, what are we talking about here? Notice we're not talking about the individual person. We're talking about a city. And so that's what I mean by suicidal. In other words, that their conduct is more than just their conduct. It affects the entire city around them. And so, when it goes well with the righteous, the city rejoices. But can you imagine this? When the wicked man perishes, there is shouting. They are clapping their hands when the wicked man goes. And again, this is the city, society, culture around you delights in the righteous man excelling, but they clap when the wicked man departs the scene. And so you've got several of these here. Notice verse 10 is that way. Verse 11. By the blessing of the upright, the city is exalted. In other words, we're not just talking about an individual here. We're talking about his conduct affects everybody around him. But it's overthrown by the mouth of the wicked. So it's a contrast. One type of man builds the city up. The other type of man tears the city down. But in both cases, it's speaking of the society around the man, what, how his conduct affects everybody else. Look at verse 13. Again, not so much that it's out of sorts, it's just an interesting parable. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. A faithful friend is not going to be a man who is running around telling stories behind your back, spreading news. Even if it's true, it's not. He's not spreading the bad news. However, he that is of a faithful spirit conceals it. He's not. I think of the statement of David when King Saul, when he got word that King Saul had died and Jonathan died on Mount Gibeah. What did he say? Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in Ascalon. In other words, don't even let this news get out. It's true, but it's not to be published. You begin to also see some parables that we hear parables. I'm stuck on parables. Proverbs. We hear some of these every now and then. And what I've begun to notice is how many of these proverbs are taken out of context. Look at verse 14 as an example. In the counseling world, I've heard all my life this one quoted, in the multitude of counselors there is safety. Right? But what is it actually saying? If you back up to the first half of the verse, it says, where no counsel is, the people fall. In other words, it's not talking about an individual, it's talking about a city. Where there is no counsel, when you don't ask the king, doesn't ask the advice of anybody, the city falls to its enemy. But in a multitude of counselors, there is safety. In other words, the wise king is going to be inquiring of his advisors as to what to do. And so it's not really talking about you and I as individuals. It's talking about somebody who is, for instance, over a city, and you've got an enemy attacking, and he's asking counsel. And if he doesn't ask counsel, he tends to get himself in trouble. There's another one like that down here at the very end, and I'm sure you didn't get this far. But look at verse 30. Says, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. I've heard the second half of that proverb quoted often. He that winneth souls is wise. In fact, Spurgeon has a sermon called The Soul Winner, and he has this verse underneath. This is his text. He that winneth souls is wise. What does that mean? We have a definition of soul winning, right? That is, speaks of evangelism. Is that what this is talking about? In fact, does anybody have a modern translation, NIV or ESV with them tonight? That's out of what? NIV? The idea seems to be of this, when you go back to the first half, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life. In other words, the righteous man tends to preserve life, is what this is saying. He is a vessel of life. So, what the second half, and, in other words, we're not looking at contrast, we're extending the thought. This is, again, one of these synthetic proverbs. He that winneth souls is wise, and winneth here seems to be used in the sense of preserving their life. And that's extending the thought of the first half of the proverb. That the righteous man, or the fruit of the righteous man, is the tree of life. He is a minister of life, and he that winneth souls is wise. It's the flip side of that. Oh well. It's hardly is the writer using soul winning here in the sense we use it. I think we'd all see that just from the context of when this was written. What about paradox? Did y'all get to any of those? Do you have one? Anybody? Take a look at verse 24. There is he that scattereth and yet increases, and there is he that withholds more than his meat, but it tendeth to poverty. Do you see the paradox there? You've got one guy that is throwing, scattering, and of course you begin to realize that although this scattering speaks of throwing seed, you know, out in the ground, but that it's talking about a benevolent man who is scattering his riches, giving his riches away, and you would think that would impoverish him, But notice the first half of this verse is that there's he that scatters, and yet he increases. The more he gives away, the more he gets. And then the second half, and this is a synthetic proverb, it extends the thought, there is he that withholds more than his meat. He's holding back, he's not scattering, he's hoarding, and yet it tends to poverty. In other words, a paradox, it's ironic. We say something is irony when the end is not what we expected, the result was not what you would expect to be, and you would think the fellow who's giving everything away, you expect that to put him in poverty, and yet what this is saying, he increases. The fellow that hoards it, you think, well, he's getting richer and richer, and he said, no, he tends to poverty. So it's a paradoxical, ironic turn of events. The same thing, look at verse 25, see if you don't see exactly the same thing here. The liberal soul, are we talking about Bernie Sanders? What are we talking about when we talk about a liberal soul here? Hillary Clinton, you know. Huh? Generous. There is a liberality that is a very, very good thing. The idea of being liberal means you're generous. And so here in verse 25, the liberal, the generous soul shall be made fat. And here's the extension again, he that waters shall be watered also himself. The more he pours out water on everybody else, the more water that gets poured on him. That again is paradox. This is not the expected outcome. You expected the guy that's pouring out all his water, he's going to go dry. But the idea is the more water he pours out, the more he himself is watered. Make sense? No, doesn't make sense. Not in the natural realm, but in the supernatural realm, yeah, that's how it works. Strange thing. Some of the most generous people I know, we think of rich folks are stingy, greedy, hoardy, you know. No. Some of the most generous people I know are rich people. And some of the stingiest people I know are poor people. How much you got has nothing really to do with it. And oftentimes the fellow who is generous with his goods is in fact enriched by the Lord. It's like the more that flows out, the more God blows in. Okay. Guess we better... Anything else catch your eye here? I mean, is this... Give me some feedback here. Is this worth doing? Are you... That's right. Sometimes there's a parallelism between the subject and the consequence, the object. And sometimes they're flipped. In other words, these proverbs get pretty complex. And there's no rhyme or reason to them. Would you admit, and this I've seen this in several things I've studied on the Proverbs, that they say from all the way from chapter 10 down when we have the words of Lemur, let me see where that starts, or Agor in chapter 30. In other words, we've got about 20 chapters here that as far as they can tell, there is no discernible pattern whatsoever. It's just like you threw a bunch of Proverbs in a bowl and stirred them up. The only order is random order. In other words, it's not like, okay, we got a whole chapter here dealing with business stuff. And then we got a whole chapter dealing with righteousness. Then we got a whole chapter dealing with the city, you know, or something like that, or paradoxes. In other words, there's no rhyme or reason. They're just all sort of mumble jumble. Any thoughts as to why that might be? That's a good observation, that life doesn't come organized. And there's a sense in which that's why I wanted you to do this exercise, is part of living life is that we're enabled not to just react in a haphazard sort of way, but that we can classify what's going on. What am I dealing with right now? I don't know if you go through that when somebody says a mean thing to you. Do you just turn scatterbrain, or do you sit down and say, what's going on? What is this? What's happening here? And how then should I respond? You understand? That's how, and Michael, I think you're exactly right. That's how life happens. It just comes like a scattergun. It just comes. It's not organized. It's not like we have all this dealing with our money, and then we have all this dealing with our family, and then we have all these crazy paradoxes. It doesn't work that way. It's just all coming out all around us at the same time. And it helps us to stop when we get in the habit, when we have things happen in life. How then do I classify this? What do I call this? How do I respond? What am I supposed to do when this type of thing comes along? Rather than just reacting without thinking, your emotions running away, the sky's falling or angry, but rather sitting back and saying, okay, let me take a look at this. What happened here? Oscar? Yeah. That's interesting. One of my assignments this weekend is the Sunday school up there in Canada. They wanted me to speak on grief. Guess they figured I had some experience with that. In thinking through that, C.S. Lewis, in his book, A Grief Observed, and it's very excellent. There's no answers. If you're looking for answers, you're looking in the wrong spot. But it is a very interesting. He just kept sort of a journal. His wife of 3 years died of cancer, and he just sort of kept a journal of his feelings and what he was experiencing. And at one point, he said that grief is like being in a valley, and you're making this journey, and you come to a turn, and the scenery completely changes. And then you go a little further, and the scenery changes once again, and then you make a turn, and you're back to similar scenery that you had before. This is that circular pattern, Oscar, that you're talking about. And he said, you think you're going in a circle, but it's really not, because it's not exactly the same as what it was the first time around. And that's what you're saying. That these proverbs seem to be, you're saying, well, they're just saying the same thing over and over again. Well, not exactly. They're coming at it from a different angle. And that's what he, in describing the grieving process, this journey, said, you know, you have the sense that I've been here before and I'm going, having to go through this again. But then you get to looking at it. No, it's not exactly the same. It's similar. So it's, you're not really going around in circles, but in a sense you are. You're hitting the same high points again, over and over again. One of the striking statements he makes that just hit me as so true. He said he keeps having people ask him, when are you going to get over this? When are you going to get past this? And he said, they're thinking of it like a river. When are you going to get to the other side? And he said, this is not a river. This is my sky. In other words, this is the sky under which I now operate and live, and no, there is no getting out of it, getting over it, getting past it. It's the new reality that I have to live under. And that was an excellent observation. Another thing, and this was a sort of, I stand guilty. He said that anyone who really knows how someone else feels when they're going through this doesn't say, I know how you feel. Because now you don't. Because every situation is different. And so he said, if you really know what's going on, you don't say, well, I know how you feel. Because it's always different. That's interesting. Huh? What? I don't know. This book is so fascinating in that he... It's literally like his journal, and things that he states at the beginning, he winds up saying later on, I don't feel that way anymore. You know, the questions that he had and the thoughts about God, he calls God the cosmic vet. And the idea that this cosmic vet does things to us that hurt us, and that's the problem, is that we want to know why, and we don't understand why it's coming, and he doesn't give us an explanation. And that is part of the struggle. It's a fascinating read. So if you're interested, get you a copy. It's not a long book, but very, very fascinating. And of course, C.S. Lewis, very deep thinker. Okay, we'll come back to Proverbs next week. I don't know what we'll do next week. We'll just keep looking. I don't think we're going to do 20 chapters of this. But I do want you to be acquainted with some of the material that's in the book. So what we may try to do starting next week is to grab some of these classes throughout the 20 chapters of these individual Proverbs and take a look at these that we'll find them sprinkled all the way through and yet see what they say and see if we can see that there's a theme that runs through this thing. Okay, and in the middle of it all, do you realize how often out of the study in 1 Peter we have hit upon quotes right out of Proverbs? This last Sunday, dealing with pride and humility, humble yourself, in due time he shall raise you up. Or my mind's gone blank. The verse just in front of that, right out of Proverbs 3, dealing with pride and humility. So in other words, you think, well, this is just a bunch of mumble-jumble stuff. But every now and then you find that the New Testament writers are pulling these out and they're appealing to this as a principle. Okay? Let's pray. I think...